Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right, welcome to the podcast. Chris Jones, what's going on, Chris?
How you doing there, Steve?
All right, we're glad to have you, man. Glad to have you. You're actually guest number one.
Guest number one.
So I was kind of looking at it. We did our episode one, this episode two. We pre-recording this, so it's just kind of a guesstimate, but we probably got it upwards of 10 to 12 followers by now. So no pressure, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I called you, Chris, and I talked to you before. I was like, you know, it's important to me, and I know it's important to you and Doug that, you know, we want to kind of record some of the things that we saw growing up. We're old men now, and we want to kind of remember some of those things and, you know, maybe contrast and compare to some of the stuff that's happening now and just kind of, you know, talk about Chiefland history, local history, and then Florida history, but anything else as well, and any funny stories we can remember, you know, that we've had happen to us along the way. And I know you got some of those for us too. And you're the mayor of Chiefland.
Yes.
So yeah, I didn't know if you'd be wearing a sash that, you know, says mayor.
See that. That won't be happening.
Or anything like that. But how long have you been mayor, Chris?
I've been in a political position since, I believe, 2013, I think, in the mayor seat, probably 5 or 6 years. Don't remember exactly, but elderly lady who was actually friends with my mom, Betty Walker, she passed away, and that's when I ended up going in that position and have maintained it since that point.
So you kind of got voluntold? Is that kind of how
during that time, we only have a committee of five commissioners, and the commissioners are the ones who actually make the vote as far as who takes the seat of the mayor. You know, okay. The public makes the
How much you got to pay them, Chris?
Who's that? I can tell Mr. Sunshine all about it.
We'll edit that out. Go ahead.
Just I've been in that position for a while, and it's got the good and the bad. It's got its high points. It's got its low points. But I definitely enjoy, you know, being able to serve a community right where I grew up.
The pay being one of the low points.
Oh, yeah.
me being, you know, somewhat uneducated on civic matters, can anybody just come in there and come to a meeting and get a moment to talk and address you guys?
Sure. I mean, that's it's open to the public just like any other, you know, typical government forum. The only time we have closed doors meeting would be less for, say, like if we're doing a negotiation for the PBA, like dealing with the police and stuff. But okay. That's the only time. But any other time, it's just doors open to the public.
So anybody come up in there and gripe and complain?
Yeah, good thing we don't have too many complaints. It's not too bad around here. I'd say probably the biggest episodes in Chiefland of my recollection was I was a proponent for pushing the alcohol sales on Sunday, and so now I will admit Chiefland did not want to let that one go. But believe it or not, I think it worked out for the better because it's brought a few new businesses into the town, and you know, so that was actually something we need, and that's kind of, I think, hurt the town for quite a while. But you know, and that was opening up Pandora's box. Nobody ever wanted to bring that one up, but I definitely brought it up, and it acquired the quite a few members of your church. Their First Baptist came out, and, but however, you know, most of them I knew on a personal level, and
you know, Southern Baptist, you know, I mean, Doug and I grew up in Southern Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. We're still recovering. But that, you know, Baptist a little tighter, you know, they a little tight. And, but I've heard, you know, they kind of like gotten a little, like everything's gotten more liberal, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, I've heard now that they'll even wave at each other in liquor stores. but so I can imagine you want to bring in the liquor on Sunday. Yeah. I can imagine that'd be controversial.
It definitely was during the time, but it passed. And like I say, it opened up some doors for us. I'm trying to think of maybe another big one that we had, but we, in fact, this one kind of involves an area, you know, down by Long Pond, had a gentleman that's coming in, came in.
Yeah.
He's wanting to develop that area also. What his
swampland.
Exactly. Over a 50-year period, he's wanting to do that. And that was one of the statements. Like, everybody was kind of, you know, hey, this guy's going to come in and fill up our swamp with lime rock. However, that's definitely not going to be the case, because right. You know that area is actually, you being a biologist, I know you're aware that that's Manistee Springs Water Basin. It's right down there where right. that property is. And so with that being said, I don't think in this day and time you're going to be able to get away with, you know, doing anything that's going to harm the environment or right. nothing to that effect. But, you know, hopefully, you know, he does it in a manner, like I say, it's over a 50-year period. So, but it's going to be some houses, some businesses. And I think any business that comes to town is a necessity for this area, because, you know, I was one of them. I was living in Trenton at the time, and I would drive every day to school over in Gainesville. So, you know, we got the Jack Wilkerson College right here in your backyard here.
Yeah,
so that's been a good thing for Chief. And I never would have imagined that when me and you were in school. So that was definitely.
Now they just need some students there. You know?
Exactly.
I tell you something that happened the other day for me. When we were little kids, mm-hmm. you know, these were just what you'd call a single track sand road to get back in here. Mm-hmm. School bus couldn't even come all the way.
They'd get stuck. Yeah, right.
And I remember, you know, being in the car with my parents and watching the dog fennel bushes get knocked down mm-hmm. as we're driving. That's you know, there was nobody else living mm-hmm. here. And the other day, I'm coming out right there by the mailbox, Doug, mm-hmm. and a car comes by with a Domino's delivery.
Oh,
And I got to admit, I was just flabbergasted, like, Domino's delivers, you know, back here. I mean, you wouldn't have never dreamed, you know, that
would happen. Heck no.
So, it just, you got to put that Red Bull, so Red Bull ain't a sponsor. You got them wings on. But yeah, that's crazy how much has changed. You know,
I grew up initially right up in town on 4th Street, and and during that time, times have just definitely changed. You know, Chiefland's still a small town, but still it's kind of changed with the times. Probably my first recollection of you was probably, if we're just going to take you way back, was when we were playing ball for good old Cinchin Logging Supply, if you remember that.
Andy Cinchin.
Yep. In fact, their old building.
Yep.
His old building still out there for 27, where he sold his chainsaws and logging equipment. And in fact, that road goes down to another historic little thing, which is the Quilt Museum, is on that same road also.
Right.
But those are different times, because I can remember during that time, you don't even see it like that now, but right here, Chiefland alone had enough kids playing baseball. You don't have kids interested in sport of that nature now like they used to be, but I can remember probably had, I'd say six, if not seven, towns that were right here from town. If I remember correctly, like Cinchin Logging Supply, White Ford had a team.
There were a lot of kids back then.
Oh, yeah.
We were younger people back then.
Yeah, and it's definitely changed, Doug. You see a kid nowadays, it's kind of odd. You know, they got that phone in their hand. That's their whole gist.
Yeah.
In fact, I got on my kid one time. This is years ago, but he was in the house playing a video game, and in that particular video game, it was like a street car racing video game, and he's in there, got this car, he's adding all these accessories to it. And I say, there's a real one out there in the garage. It was a W6 Trans Am. Exactly. So, you know, he had never showed no desire to work or mess with that real one, but it was in there on a video game enjoying it.
You know, just speaking of things that's changed over time, I look at, you know, when we were kids in high school, you know, it was nothing for a kid to have your weapon, you know, long arms out in a truck. You know, and I look now, these morons, you'd hate to see them taking a gun to school nowadays. But however, you know, just, it was nothing, you know, if hunting season was going on, you know, about every kid that hunt had an old beat up pickup truck that had a rifle and a shotgun stuck in the back window. That was common around here, and I can never remember an incident with that.
I can remember being in the parking lot at school,
mm-hmm.
and Coach McCall, who was the principal, I think, at the time, he would walk up to my vehicle and look and be like, "Oh, Steve, is that a 30-06? He'd want to know about what type of rifle I got. But it was understood it was for hunting, and it wasn't, you know, nobody was going to shoot anybody. And, you know, that's a whole other thing we could say for another podcast. But, you know, that transformation, I don't know what happened. I really don't. You know, where we went from that to where we are now.
Yep.
And I guess that's part of being old. I just can't understand it, right?
Yeah, it's definitely changed. That's all I can say. You know, like I say, just I can remember very well, you know, with the weapons and hunting in this area.
Now you're also a businessman yourself. And as I understand, you're an expert mechanic of street bikes. And you build engines for Racing street bike.
Yep.
How did you come about to do that? I mean, you have to learn about that from somebody in a small town.
I'll be frank with you on that. When I was a kid, you know, my mom, she always used to tell me, she says, if we ever move out the country, I'll get you a dirt bike. You know, so I spent many years there reading through Cycle World, Dirt Rider, or whatever the magazine of choice. She had no problem with buying them 4 or 5 magazines a month there for me to read. But when it came time to buy that actual bike, it was a little different story there. She had a big fear of bikes. But
so magazines had an influence on you. That was like the internet back then.
Yeah, of course. You know, you got, you know, during our era, you know, man, I can remember being the dumb kid that just went out, had the bicycle set up the garbage cans and go pretend you're Evel Knievel. So definitely went through that era of crashing bicycles and getting stitches, you know, along the way, you know, learning the foundation of it. But finally, when we moved out there to the country, I finally did get a bike. Actually, to be honest with you, my dad bought it from my brother there. My brother was supposed to pay for it, but let's just say that didn't happen. So that bike being at the house, I always rode. Actually, it was a three-wheeler. It was the first one that was around, and I rode the wheels off of that thing. And actually, on the weekends, actually, my brother, whose bike it, I guess, officially was, but he would come pick me up on the weekends when he was going to school at Florida State, and we'd go race. And actually, my mom never even knew I was racing for probably about a year until I came home, couldn't hardly walk, hadn't hurt my back there from an accident. So,
you were dirt bike racing at first.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
So what were your first kind of dirt bikes?
The first actual motorized vehicle that I had other than a go-kart was what was so popular in this area during that time was I had an ATC 200X, which was Honda's like kind of sport three-wheeler, unlike the Big Reds and all that other stuff. Those are the ones you'd see commonly most around here, but I had the 200Xs and the 250Rs, which were the competition-style bikes is what they were. And that's kind of what opened the door for me, and then got into street bikes. And same thing there, won't lie, we were illegal street racing. We'd go, man, it was none for us to have.
When did you start working on the engines? Did you have someone that taught you that, or are you self-taught?
You know, believe it or not, Doug, I actually had, you know, I guess from reading so much, you know, prior to even owning one, I had understood the theory and how the stuff functioned before I even owned one, just simply from reading those magazines. And that stuff used to intrigue me, just how a, you know, internal combustion motor functions. So I had a pretty good background before I ever even touched one, at least for, say, you know, the technical side of it. And so when I did finally got a bike, you know, and at that point, you know, along with all that reading, you're watching like these professional guys and the modifications and stuff they were doing. So I was simply just mimicking what they were doing. And you learn along the way, you blow crap up and fix it and move on. And, you know, pretty soon you got it figured out. And that's what any form of motorsports or even baseball, football, you know, you just keep practicing it till you kind of go on.
You got into, and I'm ignorant on the subject, but you got into drag racing, right, of motorcycles.
So the drag racing thing, you know, during that time, I was actually working for Fish and Wildlife, so which was kind of a horrible combination to have a government job and you're out street racing all over the place in Florida there. So that probably wasn't a good idea at the time, but when you're in your 20s, you don't think things through. You're just enjoying life. But however, this it was actually me and another, all of us had bikes during that time, at least 15 or 20 of us that had street bikes. And probably me and O'Shelton Bowers were probably the ones that clashed the most. You know, he always had fast bikes, and I did too. So we kind of honed our skills racing against each other here locally. And then we would used to go out, they call it Turkey Town. You know where Turkey Town is. We'd go out there and race on Sundays. And even then, that was a different era. You know, we went out there and done what we had to do and got from out there. We weren't posting it on, well, there wasn't a YouTube then, but we weren't exactly trying to draw attention to ourselves by no means. We were trying to go out there and get it over with. But that's what got me into street racing. And then as the bike started getting faster, you know, at that point, I reached a point where we started going to the racetrack. And just like anything else, was just that learning curve. Started practicing, going fast. And then at that point, you know, I wanted to try on a professional level. And my first year was a good year, but it was a learning lesson. I found out at that point, not only do you got to win a race, you got to win several before you make it to the finals. So I had this thing where I wasn't checking my bike over, and I can remember making a many trips to other states, even as far as Norwalk, Ohio. One year, we were number one qualifier and went out the first round because a simple pin came out of the air shifter on our bike, which is what pulls the bike in gear. You don't shift those things with your hand, it's on a button. But anyway, you know, after that long drive, that whole year was a learning curve. And when we came back the next year, I think everything went entirely different. We started winning races and, you know, started sending letters out to companies for sponsorship. And I think in 2009, we were sponsored by WPS, which is a parts distributor. Then we picked up help from Shinko Tires. So, you know, just kind of timing, everything was perfect. And that year of the nine races in that series that we attended more than nine races, but from the series we were in, which is AMA Drag Bike during that time, I think we won seven of those nine races. The first two, everybody's your friend. But after we started winning religiously, we kind of found out we didn't have too many friends at that point. So
then they wanted you to build their bike. Well, you need to close with a funny story.
Yeah.
Craigslist killer. That's
not a good one. No, I'll tell you that story. It's crazy. Yeah. You know, Steve, I hadn't asked Marlon about it. Let me turn this stupid phone off. I hadn't asked Marlon about that to know what's going on with that. It's probably over. He never did talk much about it. What happened, Doug? Mm-hmm. There was a Galvin O'Kella, that's in a nutshell. Galvin O'Kella had up an ad for a Mustang for sale. Because I remember now, they told me the Mustang never even existed. They get to the guy's place to buy this Mustang.
And it's a buddy of yours or y'all?
This is Marlon. That's Marlon and another guy together. I don't remember his name, but Bunk's son.
So is this like in the Ocala Forest, kind of in the edge of Ocala?
In fact, it's in Forest. That's okay. One of those towns out there off of State Road 40.
State Road 40, okay.
Road 40. But yeah, they ended up going out to look at this Mustang. And like I said, the Mustang wasn't there. It was all a fake.
Just to lure people.
Yeah, and supposedly, here's the gist of it. The guy ended up stabbing Marlon's friend, I guess, when he walks back there for the money or whatever. Marlon's in the truck on the phone, playing with his phone or whatever, from where he's telling me about it. And time had passed, and then he rolls around the corner, walks out there in the yard, and sees his buddy on the ground. And about that point, old boy runs up, and Marlon actually is able to pull his gun, I guess, from the way he explained it to me. He ends up shooting him, but it wasn't fatal. It actually some kind of way caught him in the gut and went in and out of him. And long story short, he said he has no cell service out there. So he's trying to call 911 to get the cops there, which was they ended up leaving the scene to go to a store, I guess, or somewhere to get a signal and coming back. And just to summarize it all, when the cops came there, you know, obviously knew this boy and loose cannon, crazy dude. But when they started probing the property, I know it was at least a man and a woman, and it might have been more, but they ended up digging up. And there was this same ad that he had used. He had killed another couple who came there basically with the cash money. So, you know, really this Mustang never did even exist.
Oh, so he would kill them and keep the money.
Exactly.
Oh,
yep.
Oh man.
Yeah, so that's what the whole deal was. But he met two country boys who wasn't having that.
Yeah, he got the wrong customers.
Those cheap boys.
Watch out about some Craigslist ads. If they're too good to be true, you know, they're fake. Well, that's great. Yeah, well, it's just been wonderful to have this chat with you.
Yeah.
Well, Steve's going to ask you a question that we ask of all of our guests.
What's that?
Yeah, the closing question, Chris, and we're going to get a lot of people smarter than me on here. So you know, we're trying to Doug and I are trying to learn. You know, we're trying to develop ourselves. and mature. But one thing I'd like to ask you is just share with us, like, what's maybe the best guiding principle that's helped you throughout your life? Let's just say you could go back in time and you could meet 18-year-old Chris and you could say one thing to him that could shape and mold and guide that young person's life. What would that be?
You know, this probably sounds cliche or like real simple answer, but you know, I guess, you know, when you say like go back and meet 18-year-old Chris, you know, at that point, you know, I guess my brain was probably in left field during that time. I wanted to be a rock star or something like that, running across the world playing music, and that's a whole different story in itself. But you know, your mindset changes as years go by, and I'd say, you know, this sounds real cliche, but kind of the way I go through life is I definitely believe in a higher power, but you know, I don't get hung up in the differences of religion, because you know, I've studied religion with several different people. I grew up just like you did in a church. It was AME, which is a Methodist church, and you know, and I've went to a variety of churches over the years, and you know, and even done study with Jehovah's Witness and so on. But however, you know, my most fundamental part of life, you know, is just to treat someone, you know, exactly how you would want to be treated. And you know, as you get older, you know, that you kind of value things differently. I mean, I don't have any regrets of how I've ever done anybody, but that's probably my most simplistic thing that I say, you know, especially like you say to, you know, there's times I've had to set my kids straight because, you know, the millennial generation, they're pretty unfiltered, you know, so I've set him straight, and that's what I told him, you know, like, man, I don't care what you do for a living, you know, but, or whatever, but, you know, make something of yourself, you know, and treat people just like you want to be treated. And that's kind of my way of life, you know, and, but, you know, I tie that somewhat to, you know, even the religious aspect of it, because, you know, I'll say, I don't maintain any type of interest in any one religion or the other. I hate to say this, but my studies of religion has been more of out of curiosity, but I definitely consider myself a person that believes in a higher power, because I think there's some examples in life that I've been through with accidents and health issues that I don't think it was the doctor that saved me. I think it was just wasn't my time to go, and divine intervention, or call it what you may, but I think there's a higher power that, you know, looks out for you. But my biggest thing is just treat someone how you want to be treated, you know.
All right, we've enjoyed having you on the podcast.
All right,
come back and we'll do it again.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much for coming, and it's a blessing.
All right.
All right.
Thanks,
Thank
Steve.
You.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Also, make sure to check out the video version on YouTube. The video version includes bonus content at the end you'll surely don't want to miss. If you have any ideas for future podcast episodes, or if you would like to be a guest, please reach out. We also ask for you to send pictures or any bonus content, and we'd be pleased to add it to the bonus content portion of an episode. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.